I'll have something for the children and something for all of us, really, but you know what I mean. And I'll have announcements. That after that, David L. will speak to us from Hebrews, and then Dwight will lead a share time, singing time, to wrap up then. So I'd invite everyone to stand, please, and then let's move toward the front of the church, and all the children could come all the way to the forward front and sit on the front two benches. And gentlemen, if you could move there. Yes, all the children, if you could come over here in these two rows, that'd be great. And you can sit down whenever you're closer to the front than you were. That's great. Okay, well, good evening. It's so good to be with you, and thanks for coming out in the cold. It's pretty cold out there, isn't it? Yeah, I know. Okay, tonight I'm going to tell you a story about how powerful God is. So then I have a question for you. How powerful do you think God is? Any ideas? Yeah, what do you think, Braden?
He can do anything.
He can do anything. So he's like really powerful, right? Like we can just barely wrap our minds around it, right? Okay. Psalm 66 says, and this is like a prayer to God, how awesome are your deeds. So great is your power that your enemies cringe before you. All the earth bows down to you. They sing the praises of your name. God is really powerful. So our God is so powerful that nothing stops him. Even the sun and the moon obey him. So, question for any of you. How old is your grandpa? Do you know how old your grandpa is?
78.
78. Good. And how old are you?
10.
So your grandpa was born about 68 years before you were, right? That's a pretty long time ago, right? Okay. Well, tonight our story takes place thousands of years ago, which is way, way more years than your grandpa is old. Okay. So the great thing about this story is that our God is the same God as he was several thousand years ago. He's just as powerful now as he was way back then. Okay, I'm going to need a lot of help to tell my story. In fact, I'm going to need the whole audience to tell my story. So, first of all, Stephen, James, and Johnny. You come forward, and let's see, Dwight, why don't you come up as well, and I think I'll need one more. Lowell, can you come up? Okay. So let's spread out just a little bit. Let's see. James, why don't you come over here and stand in the middle aisle somewhere, and why don't you also... Why don't you stand up on the stage somewhere? Good. And you can stand about there. Make sure someone can get behind you there. Great, great, great. And John, you can come a little this way. Actually, see, I'm going to need someone over here. So John, why don't you come over here? Okay. So, this man wearing the beard is Joshua. Okay? So when I point to Joshua, everyone should cheer, hooray! So let's try it. Hooray! All right, great. And Josh, you should like flex your muscles and like you're one of the heroes of the story, okay? Yeah, that's right. Okay. Okay, now, let's see. Why don't you be the kings? You're going to be the kings in this story. In this story, there are five kings, and behind this, great, great. Okay, so, this guy represents five kings and their five armies. Okay? So when I point to the king, everyone should say, boo. Okay? Boo. He's not a good, not good. Okay. And you should like make a mean face and shake your fist at us. Okay, whenever I point to you. Good. Good. Now, you. All right, you represent battle. Okay, so you, when I say, like, when I point to you, you can swish your sword around a couple times. Good, good. And everyone else will help make the sound for battle. So it'll be like, biff, pow. All right? Help me. Okay? Biff, pow. Now use your, like, one fist and then the other fist. Biff, pow. Great. Okay. Now, Stephen, you're going to be the hailstones. Okay. Now, do those look like hailstones? They're really big. Okay, they're big hailstones. That's great. So, everyone needs to help make the sound for hailstones, which it's going to be like we slap our laps a couple times, like this. Okay, good. Let's practice that. So let's point to him. Good. That's hailstones. Thank you. Okay. Yes. This guy is going to be the sun. He represents the sun. So when I point to the sun, you should all say, ooh. Ooh. Good. Now, son, you're supposed to walk in very slow circles around the whole group, just the whole time the story's going. And when I point to you, well, you know what to do, okay? Got it? Okay. So you can start walking. You're good. Okay, now let's practice, because you have to help me out here, right? Okay. So let's practice Joshua. Do you remember what the sound is for Joshua? Hooray! Good. And the kings? Boo! Good. And the battle? Biff! Pow! Let's try that one again. That was hard. Biff! Pow! Good. And what about the hailstones? Okay, you guys got this. Okay. So let's begin our story. Today's Bible story is about Joshua, and it comes from the Old Testament. It happened many thousand years ago. So after Moses, the leader of Israel, died, God chose a new leader, and his name was Joshua. Hooray! Right. Joshua was a faithful man who listened to God and obeyed him. One day, God told Joshua to lead the people of Israel across the river to the land he had promised to give them. It was a wonderful land. It was full of really good things. But the land was ruled by five kings. Yes, and they had vast armies who did not love God or worship him. The bad news was that before Israel could move into the land, God said that they would have to fight a battle. Biff! Pow! That's right. With the kings. Boo! The good news was that God said he would help them win. So that's really good news. The kings were afraid. They said, "We cannot fight Joshua alone. He is too strong." Hooray! So the five kings, joined together and sent their armies of soldiers against Joshua in battle. Imagine, five armies. A lot of armies. God told Joshua, "Do not be afraid of the five kings or their armies. Not one of them will be able to beat you in battle." Biff-ha! Joshua depended on God to help him win. All night, Joshua and his army marched. The next morning, he came upon the five kings by surprise. The Lord made the five armies confused and afraid. Biff-ha! What do you think the five armies did? Any idea? That's right, they ran away. So Joshua, woohoo!
Hooray!
And the army of Israel chased them down the road. As they ran, the Lord threw large hailstones down on them from the sky. All right, the Lord was fighting for Israel. But the battle was not over yet. Joshua needed more time to fight the kings and their five armies. So he prayed, "Lord, please make the sun stand still until we finish fighting with our enemies." Ooh. And do you know what happened? The sun stood still. Ooh. It stopped in the middle of the sky for a whole day while Israel battled the five armies. Ooh. The sun stood still until Israel had won. Ooh. it was a miracle from God. There has never been a day like it before or since. Now I have several more questions. How powerful do you think God is? All powerful, like really powerful. Like we can't even really wrap our minds around it. Do you think God has changed? No, he's the same God. God's still exactly the same as he was several thousand years ago. He's just as powerful now as he was back then. He can make the sun stand still. Ooh. But God is the one who makes the sun come up every morning and makes it set in the evening. So, tomorrow morning, when you see the sun or the light, I want you to remember two things. God is the one who made it come up. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, God is just as powerful today as he was several thousand years ago. So those two things again are, God's the one who makes the sun come up, and in the story we heard today, he's the one who made the sun stand still, and God is just as powerful today as he was several thousand years ago. Okay, thank you all very much for helping. You may go back to your parents. All right, what announcements do you have for the group? Is there anyone else? Yes.
We are getting interned from Facebook again in January, and she's flying from Canada. It's a long, long way to drive, but she will need some transportation while she's out here. And so if anybody has a vehicle that you think would be available for a week or part of the time she's here, that could be helpful.
Okay, very well. David, would you come up?
I'm assuming we can settle for a little less drama than we've had until now. And also, not quite sure I understood my assignment altogether, but when Nathan called me, I thought it was to have something to do with New Year's, and maybe he suggested a passage. I kind of didn't catch on with that, I guess. And I told him initially that maybe I should take a little time to think this over before I answer for sure. As we talked a little longer, I said, well, if I don't let you know different, well, I will accept the assignment. And then after a bit, I wondered, well, what should I say? I was thinking in terms of the passing of time and New Year and that sort of thing. But I then suddenly remembered that I had written something, I guess 50th anniversary, which would have been 08. And I thought, well, wouldn't that be appropriate to share. And I thought, well, that's the way to go. And I even read it out loud to myself to see whether that would fit in the time block. And it would have about worked for that. But the longer I pondered and prayed, the more the Lord seemed to direct my thoughts a little differently. And so what I have to share is consideration for the passing of time, and quite a few sort of snippets, short statements and quotes. And if time permits, I would like to spend a bit of time putting a bit of meat on some bare bones of history. Now, that sounds like a pretty big order, and I admit that might run out of time, but just relax, I still know how to tell time. the thing that I'm going to do here is that what sort of came to me, it seemed to me it would please God to influence us to think very seriously about who we are, where we've come from, and where we're going. In fact, I had entitled that other writing, Retrospect and Prospect, which is simply saying, looking back and looking ahead. And we're doing a little of that here, not very much. but the fact that human life is so very, very brief, and eternity is endless, should influence us to choose our lifestyle and make our choices accordingly. And God has provided a reliable guidebook to show us the way. He prayed in the high priestly prayer, sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is truth. It is not a legalistic book of rules. It is a God-breathed message of life, a message of reconciliation that we are to receive and to share with others. It and he mentions sanctify them through that truth. Sanctification and holiness are synonyms, are very close to that. God has provided for us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. He has made full provision for our successful journey. Basic foundation stones are God's word of truth and the Lordship of Jesus Christ. Just a couple of things here on a more practical note. Some time ago, there was a visitor in our living room, and he made this comment. He said, I'm aware that you people, Reno County, Beachy people, push higher education. How would you respond to that kind of a comment? I said, it seems to me it might be more correct to say we have some openness to advanced training. And I think it wouldn't hurt to just look at that a little bit and to realize that we do have some openness, and some things couldn't be done without some formal training. And I think the history has been that particularly when people felt a call into a certain field of service that required formal training, we were very open to that. And of course, an outstanding example would be the medical doctor, Sister St. Janice, formal training. Another thing that I'd like to include here that I think is pertinent to our times is nonconformity is really all-pervasive when you come to think of it. That doesn't mean that we are under obligation to do differently than the world, but we get our directions from a different source. And we try to be sensitive to not get carried away in wrong directions, such as many do around us. And I'm going to mention one thing that I think can actually become idolatrous. That is the sports craze. And I mentioned several things. The outstanding athletes, they get astronomical reimbursement for their involvement. And not only that, some of these sports events, people just get carried away with mindless frenzy. And so why don't we just sort of recognize that as something that doesn't quite fit with a separated lifestyle, it can actually become idolatrous. Now, rules are guidelines, and that is not to take the place of simply following Christ with a renewed mind. Rules is rules without conscience is shallow, and it would spell the need for repentance and the renewing of the mind. History can teach us many things if we are not too busy to pay attention. Throughout sacred history and more recent church history, there is a troublesome pattern of forgetfulness and falling away. The church has often abandoned some New Testament priorities and practices in favor of something more socially and politically expedient. What is worthy of our more serious attention is that Amish Mennonites have more often than not succumbed to the pressures of conformity in violation of some New Testament teaching. It is only realistic to remember that we are not exempt from such possibilities. God is faithful. He can help us. He can keep us from falling. Let us respond in faithfulness, undivided faithfulness. We owe it to God, to ourselves, and those who would come after us. Now I'm going to resort to a bit of history. Some of you may be very familiar with this, but I'm assuming all of us can use a little refresher course. But there was a man in Adams County, Indiana, one time. He was an Amishman. His name was Henry Eagley. And in 1858, he had a spiritual experience that he felt very deeply about, and he felt that others should also share that experience. He also had another concern, and that was that he felt that the Amish church there had been a little too loose in, to see to the regulations. And that was, I did just a little research recently, and that part was a surprise to me. Well, they were called for some time, the Eagley Amish. And I'm assuming that was not a name of their own choosing, that was probably kind of a nickname. But at somewhere along the line, they were called Defenseless Mennonites. Well, that tells us one thing, that these people were determined, they were committed to upholding Christian non-resistance at that point. And and I don't understand all of this, but my source says that in 1883, they had their first conference meeting. Does the name 1883 ring a bell with any of you? How many of you think of something happening in 1883? Let's see your hands. Okay. Elmer?
I think that's when the group started here.
That's when the Amish came to Reno County, Kansas. And my great uncle, who's the grandfather of Esther, Sam Esther, and some others, told my brother Edwin one time that when they first came here, the Mennonites up in the Sterling Abbeville area looked Amish. Well, that's interesting. And I recall something else, that when I was a young married man, I was to the livestock sale, and one of their number, never knew his name, I guess, but I knew where he was from. He called attention to my beard, and he said, "That's all right for older people, but young people should not need to do that." And he was putting his finger on something I think important, and that is that the rising generation is entitled to taking liberties that are not according to what had been practiced earlier. Well, anyhow, Defenseless Mennonites. And in World War II, it was a very popular war. Why not? Pearl Harbor. Nazi Germany, Hitler, wanting to conquer the world because he was of us. He was a white person, supreme race, you know. And so it became the patriotic duty of many people to help fight this war. Never mind that Jesus had spoken about this and the apostles spoke about it. And Jesus very pointedly said, "My kingdom is not of this world, and my servants don't fight." And that is consistent with what he said in the Sermon on the Mount. Continuing the story, the Mennonites, they dropped defenseless from their name, and they became Evangelical Mennonite Conference. Well, after all, they had certain dynamics at work. I'm not sure what they were altogether, but I was on the MCC board while they were considering dropping the name Mennonite. I'm with a man who is from that group, and he said he thinks that the term evangelical, in practical terms, carries perhaps more negative baggage than the term Mennonite. But, well, it's a perfectly good word, we know that. But they have now deleted that also. Well, how did that happen? And I'm going to be done here shortly, and I wish there were time for questions, but I would suppose that they did several things, perhaps more or less unintentionally part of the time, but I think they started out with a firm conviction for what we would consider good nonconformity. But I suppose as time went on, they saw that that spirituality was not something that we wear on the outside, and so they sort of internalized it. And they also sort of minimized it. And they also sort of spiritualized it to the point it was no longer important. Let me just inject here that I think we would do well to pay attention to what Jesus said about straining at gnats and swallowing camels. I think in our carefulness not to strain at gnats, we don't want to forget that swallowing camels can be a lot more damaging. And they are twin dangers. Now, just one additional thing. I knew a man from that from the church up the Mennonites up there. Let me say this. It would be wrong for us to have a judgmental spirit. But it's not wrong for us to observe things that what we can learn. And those can be positive things or negative things. And it is not wrong to notice that in their journey, they have abandoned some things that are clearly taught in the New Testament. I'll mention the thing non-resistance, and also, oh no, I'd never bring this to church. Tonight I did for some reason. Just mark that up for a little bit of a diversion. And I was told to bring this along in case we need it. Anyhow, but they did abandon some clear teaching in favor of contemporary appearance. I knew a man who talked about his journey a little bit. His name was John Wagler, and he mingled with our people quite a bit. And he told me one time when he and his wife wanted to get married, why the church was making some requirements they didn't think were necessary. What did they do? They got married with the justice of the peace. But he used to talk about his church and his Sunday school teacher and so on. And he also, he died in a car accident when he was in his early 70s. And I went to his funeral. I was never to a funeral that I recall that not one mention was made of the one that the funeral was for. The minister was just very careful to speak it another way. Well, anyhow, I learned later he was not a member of the church. And very likely never had been. But he identified with those people. And in spite of all the concessions and the conformity that we're engaged in, they have not had that smooth a journey. And so I would idealize for us that we take this opportunity here at this new year, and we just simply resolve to follow the Lord, who's the same yesterday and today and forever, and has made full provision for our successful journey. And a good conclusion to our journey. Now, if there's a quick question, that's fine, but I don't suppose our time would allow much of that. Have anything you'd like to ask or add? Lord bless.
Well, it's good to be gathered with you here tonight. This next period, I'm going to be opening it up for you to share. If you want to share in a reflective manner over the past year or looking forward ahead to the new year, I'm open to that.